For the second time in the original Winnipeg Jets history, this being the team that is now in Arizona, they are relocating to a different market. That is code for Arizona is losing their NHL team. They're losing it to a city that hosted the Winter Olympics once upon a time. I'm a Canadian, and I know that because the men's hockey won gold that year. This is not a very happy, fun time for Coyotes fans, understandably so. But there might be light at the end of the tunnel if their now former ownership group plays their cards right, gets some land, builds an arena. But for the time being, it's Heartbreak City. We will talk about what led to this move and what happens next, potentially, hopefully, for this team in episode 408 of the Lace Them Up podcast, which starts right now.
And now it's time to lace them up. Here's Brett and Steve.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Steve Ellsworth.
I'm Brett Dubuff.
Years ago, about 30 years ago, the Coyotes, led by a young Shane Doan, were moving from Winnipeg to Arizona, then called the Jets, soon to be the Coyotes. They spent almost 30 years there, and now his kid, who is off to a pretty great start in his NHL career in his own right, is now going to be moving to Salt Lake City from Arizona.
We were just talking about this off the air of, like, you know, famously, Austin Matthews grew up in Arizona, and we were also finding out that Tage Thompson also grew up in Arizona. Matthew Nyes is another one, and we found out in a roundabout way that Sean Couturier also grew up there, because his, like, father played for the IHL Phoenix Roadrunners. And then while you were talking just now, I just kind of went into a rabbit hole here, and I found that Tage Thompson's father also played for the Phoenix Roadrunners, which were in, I'm just going on like a crazy rabbit hole, so bear with me now, I know.
I love how you admit that the Tkachuk brothers were also born there.
the Tkachuk brothers were also born there, but they grew up in St. Louis for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, and I can't believe we're starting the show like this without me telling the big lead here. But anyways, I got into this rabbit hole here, and I found out that Tage Thompson's father also had a similar situation with Sean Couturier's father. So then I started to look up on because Sean Couturier's father played for the Phoenix Roadrunners, which is a IHL team. And this was like a league that was out in the 90s. His father's name is Sylvian Couturier. Tage Thompson's father is also on here. But I'm looking here and I see Scott Bjugstad was also on this team. It doesn't seem like that's the same guy. There's also, but like a lot of like, oh, like, I wonder if this is the same, you know, this is their father. Ed Kastelic, which I believe there's a Kastelic in the NHL right now, too.
Yeah, Mark Kastelic, who plays for your Ottawa Senators.
There's also a Brett Sagan, but I don't think there's any relation there, because I just looked and I was like, oh, okay, he's not related to Tyler.
Yeah, by the way, Tyler Scott Sagan. Bjugstad is the uncle of Nick Bjugstad, who has also spent time in Arizona with the NHL's Coyotes.
And then lastly, Jeff Chychrun was also on this team. Who, you know, Jacob Chychrun also played for the Coyotes as well. But so a lot of fathers on that random 92-93 Phoenix Roadrunners team. Anyways, but it is like, you know, like obviously we started off on a tangent, but the point being that we would very likely wouldn't have a lot of these NHL players, not just Austin Matthews, because famously Austin Matthews went to a game with his uncle, and that's how he fell in love with the game of hockey. And it is kind of fitting that Austin Matthews is about to get 70 goals in a season, something that we haven't seen in more than a decade by now. And it's like, oh, it's the same year that, you know, Arizona is getting their team taken away from them. And so, yeah, that part is definitely very saddening to me, because it's like,
and it's a big reason why sports are so important,
right? Exactly. And it's like
we look at that as an IHL team, but look what it did.
It's like, yeah, I know that like the Coyotes were a butt of the joke for their existence, and I get it, like the management sucks, but at the same time, it's like Austin Matthews is, you know, he's obviously not as good as McDavid, but you could make a case that he's the second best player in the league. And we wouldn't have that. we wouldn't have him. And, you know, obviously you get into like the alternate scenarios and stuff. It's like maybe he would have fallen in love with hockey if he wasn't
there. How many
there, but
young players are watching Clayton Keller and Logan Cooley and Dylan Gunther and inspired by them and taking up hockey because of them?
Josh
Some of those
Doan.
Dreams could be crushed as a result of this.
Josh Doan now as well.
Yeah, watching his dad play.
Exactly. So we are somewhat bearing the lead, and it's a little bit unusual of how we usually do it. But now I should give you the timeline of what went down recently and what changed. So we did have I believe we had an extensive episode about this, but in case you guys forgot or you didn't listen to that one, there was over last year, there was a Tempe, Arizona was planning on, or the Coyotes were planning on getting a spot of land in Tempe, Arizona, and Tempe, the city of Tempe, was like, no, we don't like that. And then,
specifically, the citizens of Tempe didn't want it.
Exactly.
And were pretty vocal about it.
And it seemed like the writing was on the wall at that point, where it's like, okay, it sounds like this isn't going to happen. The new Suns owner at the time, it seemed like, oh, maybe he's a possibility, but it turns out that he was just like, you know what, I don't think this is going to work. And then recently there's a bit of land in Phoenix, Arizona that just opened up right now. And Murillo, who's the owner of the Coyotes currently.
Yeah, Alex Murillo.
There's a current bid for a bit of land in Phoenix, Arizona. And that's in June. And the idea is that if they win this land, they had this like huge like video. They posted it on Twitter like about a week ago, and it was kind of funny because it like when I was watching it, I was just like, what am I watching? Like, because it was just very like futuristic. It felt like it was AI generated in a way, because it was just like it just like felt like very weird. I don't know. But you're just like, okay, oh God, like what's going on? And then
apparently, I think it was the mayor, I can't remember who, but just a little side note, there was apparently the Coyotes said they consulted people on this, and the Steve Dangle podcast alluded to some of this, and the mayor's just like, hold up, I wasn't consulting about anything. In fact, I actually have some concerns, and they weren't like gigantic concerns, like they're just like little things, but the fact that people aren't consulted, aren't given the full picture, is a little bit of a red flag, don't you think? Like even the basic stuff they fail at.
We'll get into that, and not to mention the fact that I don't know if you know this, but it's because it's been all over, so there is a chance that you do know this, but the guy who runs the social media team for the Coyotes is Alex Murillo's son, Alex Murillo Jr. So that means literally.
I didn't know that, but that doesn't surprise me.
So literally any time, because like over the last year or so, Alex Murillo Jr., like the Coyotes have been very defensive about this situation. And, you know, obviously we get it. They're, you know, they're
no
in a weird situation.
No wonder it had this brainwashed tone. Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, they're just saying, like, we're going to buy this land. We're you know, like, what are you guys talking about? We're not moving.
Relax.
We're not doing this.
Fine. And the team's not going anywhere.
And he only got fine. This job because his owner is his father.
They're even putting up job opportunities or, yeah. like internship stuff.
Yeah.
And then within hours, it's just like, yeah, yeah. About all that.
So,
you're kind of moving Utah.
Right, yeah. So, in any case, they're moving. So that bid is going to be in June. Yeah. And let's say that.
The draft in the NHL will be over by then.
True, true. So, let's say, and so then we have to get going with the story, too.
Yeah.
So now, so like, let's say hypothetically that Murillo does win this land, supposedly, according to Murillo, that it would take 3 years to get a workable rink and environment to actually, play in at that point yeah. in time. So
I
that's when
fall of 2027 would be the earliest
exactly.
we would get to play, which is still a ways away. Yeah.
So that's when Bettman was like, you know what, we like, as cool as it is to have a college rink to host for an NHL team, and, you know, it is kind of a cool little atmosphere there, we're just, you know, we can't do any more than 2 years. You've had your shot and all that stuff. So Bettman pulls the plug, coincidentally, or maybe not coincidentally, but... there, Ryan Smith, and not the famous Ryan Smith on the Edmonton Oilers, who played for the Edmonton
yeah,
Oilers.
Also worth a lot more than that Ryan Smith.
Exactly. But, although I think yeah. they spell their name the same way, which is interesting.
Seems to love hockey, though.
Yep. But it's also interesting because it's just like Ryan, like they spell the same name. They spell their name the same way, and it's like a
yeah,
unique spelling.
Yeah,
S-M-Y-T-H.
Yeah. What are the odds?
So anyways, Ryan Smith is the owner of the Utah Jazz, and he's going to buy the Coyotes with a $1.3 billion valuation. There is a stipulation with this, and we'll get into this in a second, but if Murillo can build an arena within 5 years of the sale agreement, he will be rewarded an expansion team. I think this is like just a way for Bettman to be like, okay, like we still are interested in building a hockey team in Arizona. I mean, just like we were just mentioning, it's like we wouldn't have Austin Matthews, we wouldn't have Tage Thompson, we very likely wouldn't have Jacob Chychrun, we very likely wouldn't have Nick Bjugstad, we very likely wouldn't have a lot of these guys. Matthew Nyes is another one at the start of the show. So it is worth it to build a franchise in Arizona. It's just like no one can keep it together there in Arizona and all that
yeah,
stuff.
They
so,
even have the Arizona State University hockey
yep.
program that's
yep.
slowly taking off too.
Yeah, exactly. A legend, Joey Decord and stuff. And
yep.
like
shout out Joey Decord. Yep.
Exactly. So it, you know, and there is something there. The fact that like, Arizona's like so close to LA. The fact that, you know, the Phoenix Suns are very popular in the NBA, the Arizona Cardinals are very popular in the NFL. Yeah, I guess the Diamondbacks, you know, it is very possible to be popular in Arizona. And it's hot all the time, to the point mm-hmm. where Arizona Coyotes players and personnel were informed that this is what's happened, and they were devastated because they are moving to Utah or Salt Lake City, more in fact, and that and that's like, you know, I would if you gave me a choice between living in you know, I've never been to either Phoenix or Salt Lake City, so take this for what it is. But from what I've heard, Salt Lake City is very much like Denver in terms of weather and climate, where it's just cold a lot of the time and very snowy. And whereas for Phoenix, it's a lot like Texas or Southern California, where it's just hot a lot of the time or all year round. So, yes, if I'm a player there, I would rather live in Arizona than in Salt Lake City, just from a livable condition standpoint. Of course, there's also like just, you know, if we are getting into it, the fact that Utah has a lot of like Mormons in there, and they are very like religious there. I mean, I guess
it should be noted, by the way, that the Church of Latter-day Saints, which is, you know, for lack of a better term, the Mormons, they support this, by the way. So they have the Mormons on board.
Well, you know, so I think that's the interesting part to this, too, is that like I think like because the Utah Jazz are still pretty popular, like they, you know, and, you know, like I think all our minds have kind of changed because I didn't think Vegas was going to work. And of course, it's like you have a good team and all that stuff, and they got good in the expansion draft and all that stuff. But at the same time, it's like, okay, Vegas can work. Salt Lake City is, you know, geographically speaking, it's right next to Colorado, and we know Denver loves hockey. And we'll talk about that in a second in rapid fire. And you know, Vegas, so like that area, it's like it's pretty clear that that area cares about hockey. And you know, the Utah Jazz is a good example of that too. So and they said that they're gonna change the name. I mean, it, you know, it is kind of funny. It's like Los Angeles Lakers, for instance, they were originally a franchise in Minnesota, and that was because like of all the lakes that are in Minnesota, but they were just too lazy to change the name. So they're just like, all right, Los Angeles Lakers, even though it makes no sense.
The logo is also pretty cool. I don't know if the logo was that when it moved.
I don't think so, but maybe I'll have to look it up. But it is kind of
just a bunch of lakes,
but it is kind of funny because LA has no lakes at all. So it's just,
barely rains.
Yeah. But yeah, that's just an aside or whatever. But, so I assume Utah will change their name and all that stuff. And, you know, and like you can make a case like maybe they do want an expansion draft and they do want like, you know, especially with how Vegas was a success, although Seattle is struggling this year. They did make the playoffs last year. So there is a possibility that like an expansion team could work in Utah. But at the same time, and we mentioned this before, Arizona has Logan Cooley. They have Dylan Gunther. Gunther had a 4-point night on the day that this was all getting going to, and Cooley had like 2 goals or something like that. So and then you have Danielle Butt in the system. Boot, I guess. Not
Daniel
Butt.
Boot. Also the draft capital, I want to emphasize.
Oh, well,
they have 7 picks this year. In the first 3 rounds, they have 8 the following year, and then they have 6 the year after that.
Anyways, there's Dmitry Simashev. They have, you know, and even like still currently on their team, you have Clayton Keller. They were getting like they had a good shot at making the playoffs before their 14 game losing streak, which we'll also get into in a second. Connor Ingram, he's a fun, lovable guy to root for as well. So it's like, you know, yes, you probably, if you're like an owner somewhere, and you probably would rather have an expansion draft just given how what happened to Seattle and what happened to Vegas. But at the same time, it's like there's a pretty like what makes this sad and what makes this kind of like exciting for anyone in Utah is that like they're like Arizona was rebuilding for the last couple of years, and now this is the season where it's like, oh, there's actually like some progress going on this team where they're going to be pretty, like I would not be surprised if they make the playoffs next year. In fact, I like, you know, obviously, like, it's possible that they'll be, like, the Buffalo Sabres or whatever, but it's very possible that but this team will just keep on going and build on all this stuff. So there's a good chance that Utah could get a very good team next year, whereas it's, you know, like for Vegas, they were good right away and still good. Seattle has been a little bit of hit or miss, but, you know, for the most part, it has been a huge success in terms of, like even still, like, I'm walking around in Boston, I still see Seattle Kraken logos or people wearing Seattle Kraken logos everywhere. It's Damn. Just like, what? Okay, all right, cool. So I think there is, like, something there, and I think it could work. And then lastly, before I bring it to you, well, I guess there's two things. Andre Tierney, I mentioned there was a 14-game losing streak. Andre Tierney was Tourney, who's the head coach of the Coyotes. He said that the players kind of knew, there was rumblings and inside the house that there was in January, and that was a part of the reason why they went on this 14-game losing streak. And of course, like, that is an excuse for why they were losing like that. And of course, there's other factors that went along with that losing streak. But having said all that, that's still a pretty good excuse to have, where, like, all these players are like, oh God, I'm going to have to move.
They had one hell of a poker face because up until this week, I wouldn't have known it was this immediate.
Right, exactly. And that's the other thing, too. It's like, we knew that this was probably going to happen, and this has been going on for, like, the last 5 years. In fact, like, it was just a reminder, too, of, like, when they realigned all the divisions to make room for Vegas and Seattle to move to the Pacific Division, they moved Arizona to the Central Division. And this was before Vegas was even a thing or before Seattle was a thing. Like, that, like, and it's weird, it's like, yeah, Arizona's kind of in line with Dallas and Colorado and Winnipeg and all these other teams that are in that division.
Well, you just have too many teams on, like, the West Coast. So,
exactly.
Like, it kind of makes sense why they did.
Yeah, but exactly. It was just, like, the writing was on the wall, even from that standpoint, too, where it's just like, oh, okay, Arizona's a little bit far out west, but, like, then why aren't they? But, like, geographically speaking, they should be in the Pacific Division. So then that's when it's all like, oh, okay, so this probably means that Arizona's going to be moving sometime soon, because otherwise it's like the Coyotes would be in the Pacific Division. So it's been a, like, just like, if you read the tea leaves, it's always been a thing here, and all that stuff. It's like, you know, and lastly, I think it's just like, I feel bad for all the fans there, all the players there, because they have to move. And most of all, I feel bad for Shane Doan, because, yes, you do have Josh Doan, who is good in his own right. He played for Arizona State, in fact. And then he finally gets to play in the NHL. And, you know, in retrospect,
he had a 2-goal game in his debut. Yep. He has 8 points in 9 games, 4 of them goals.
And in retrospect, it's like, okay, that, you know, that they probably, like, in other situations, they probably wouldn't have called him up or whatever, but they probably, like, at that point, they probably knew that they were moving. So they were just like, all right, let's give something for the fans. But the fact that Josh Doan, who's the son of Shane Doan, he gets to play in Arizona. He went to Arizona State. He's like the epitome of Arizona hockey. And he's going to play. And, you know, he may end up being like an average hockey player or whatever. And he probably will end up changing teams. Who knows? But, like, you were kind of thinking, it's like, oh, that's kind of a cool story that, like, you know, Josh Doan, he takes up after his father, who also is a legend in Arizona, and he's going to play the rest of his career in Salt Lake City. And that's just...
Presumably.
Yeah, presumably. Yeah, that's fair. But you could be a free agent. Notice,
presumably. Yeah.
And you know, and all that stuff. But I feel like I'm talking a lot, but so I'll bring it to you, and then we can get into this, like, potential expansion team afterwards. But yeah, any other things that I didn't mention?
Well, I'll get back to the roster in terms of what Utah has to offer in a little bit, but I wanted to get back on why the heck this is even happening in the first place. And we talked about, you know, obviously the things that kind of stuck out in the realignment and all that and why they're going to Utah. But there have been other recent things. Remember the All-Star Weekend where Marty Walsh, the head of the NHLPA, was pretty vocal about the Arizona situation?
Oh, yeah.
Player agent Alan Walsh, in the latest episode of Agent Provocateur, a part of the Steve Dingle Podcast Network. As you can tell, I watch a lot of their content.
Yeah.
But he was talking about that moment with Alan Walsh as one of those things where if he doesn't come out and say that, perhaps they're in mullet next year. And that his kind of, I wouldn't say directive, but his message of, hey, enough with this, kind of put the wheels in motion for the NHL to kind of act maybe faster than we expected in terms of the whole relocation side of things. Obviously, the other part of this is you had a guy waiting in the wings in another market wanting to be a part of this league, I would assume, pretty freaking badly. Compared to years ago where the NHL had to take control of the team for two seasons because they struggled to find ownership within Arizona and there weren't really any outside names that interested them in outside markets that interested them. So that franchise was basically a sitting duck. You couldn't really do much with that. And then you get the Morello family involved. And I think, you know, as you know, one of the NHL's first Hispanic ownerships, you're hoping that, you know, with the local ties that they had, that things were going to be different. And I understand wholeheartedly that the COVID-19 pandemic, to an extent, made a financial dent in their plans. And just like for a lot of the teams in the league, it was pretty tough for that market. I'm sure the COVID-19 pandemic impacted a lot of the business that they wanted to do there in terms of casinos and all that. And I think Morello's ties to the casinos as well kind of played into all of that. At the same time, though, regardless of how many assets you have, how rich you are, the one thing that people don't like is when you're slacking on payments. When you slack on payments in the arena you are paying to play in, the Gila River Arena. Yes, I know the location wasn't great, but at least people were driving down there to watch your team play. Maybe not as much as you would have expected, but at least you had fans going there. Certainly bigger crowds than Mullet Arena. And part of the reason why you're at Mullet Arena in the first place is because you got kicked the hell out of that building for not paying your rent, which is bad. And that gives you a bad reputation. And a lot of people look down on that. And so then you're put into a situation in Mullet Arena where not only are the crowds you're going to get a lot smaller than the average NHL facilities, the average NHL experience is used to, you know, a couple thousand people. And granted, they're all happy to be there, but you have absolutely no leverage on how to make business there, which is not a good look for you or the league. Then you also have situations where you get rumors of, oh, yeah, there's no guarantees they'll be able to, like, offer contracts this coming offseason. And they have all this dead cap as well. They have Brian Little on their dead cap. Fortunately, that's coming off the books this year, but that's been on there for ages. Mm-hmm. They have Travis Boyd on their injured reserve dead cap. They have Jacob Voracek's big dead cap coming off the books, thankfully, next year. But they still have three more years of the Shea Weber dead cap.
Right.
So you have this team just basically hoarding money that is not being of any use to them. And you get a situation of like, okay, the players that are coming in that actually want to play here are only here for a short period of time and then they're probably on their way, or the big contracts that you have just aren't playing hockey because of injuries or whatever else. So that doesn't look good on the league either. Also, the track record of the Coyotes before the Morellos came in also doesn't work well for the NHL. It's a stain on their reputation as well. And then you get rumors of, oh, they're late on hotel payments as well. The hotel bills are becoming a frequent problem to the point where apparently the NHL has to step in. Once again, got that source from the Steve Dangle podcast. And it just becomes those slew of things where if you're an NHL owner, regardless of how good or how bad things are, it's just stuff like that. Just basic, simple stuff that are no question. The hotel bills are getting paid on time. Your rent to play in your arena is getting paid on time. And multiple times this has happened with this ownership to the point where I'm sure wherever the NHL goes to sell their products, Gary Bettman has probably got, had someone come up to him and say, hey, what's going on with the Arizona Coyotes, man? It's just like, oh, no, they'll be fine. It's like, really, though? What's going on with them? Right. You took up ownership there for a couple of years, and there have been problems with this team, and now you got them skipping payments? Like, are they all right? I don't know if we want to do business with the league that has this bad apple there. It's kind of like the Major League Baseball situation with the Oakland Athletics, and now that resolution is they're going to move to Vegas eventually because they have to play in Sacramento first because they don't have a barn. But in the case of Utah, they have a hockey rink that houses 12 to 13,000, which is still smaller than Winnipeg's building, but hey, bigger than Mullet Arena still. You have the Utah Grizzlies that have been in existence since 1981. Yeah, sure, it's not AHL hockey. It's ECHL hockey. But it's a market that's been in existence since the early 80s. And you have a rink that was built since 97. You hosted the Winter Olympics. And a lot of people seem to care about that in Salt Lake City when it went over there in 2002. And hey, you've got the Utah Jazz, a professional NBA team. So you have the sports market there, where you can probably build a new arena and people will come out and watch the team and see them play and be proud to call it their own NHL team. So while I do understand the pain, and it's very real for the Coyotes fans, and I feel so bad for everyone that tried to make this venture possible, I feel sorry for the families that have taken these players in. I feel sorry for the front office people who have worked probably long hours to try and make this whole thing work. I feel sorry for the fans. Even if they can't go to the games, they do whatever they can to support the team, and they do whatever the owner tells them to do to keep the team here long term. At the end of the day, when I look at everything that's going on around this organization, I'm just like, if you're the NHL, what choice do you have?
Yep.
I just didn't see, under the Morello regime specifically, how things could have gotten any better in a short period of time. And now that you put them in a situation where you give them 5 years to figure out their stuff and get the land and build an arena and let things happen organically and not check in every couple of months or every couple of weeks, hey, how's things going? Just wanted to make sure you're still paying your bills and you got the land and all this stuff. You don't have to worry about any of that. You're moving the team to Utah. You have certainty if you're the NHL. And if you're the Coyotes, the future Coyotes, you at least have time to get things right. The problem with the Coyotes situation is there are no guarantees in life and there are no guarantees in business. Just ask the Quebec Nordiques, who in the time they have left, have watched Nashville get an expansion team, have watched Minnesota get their team back via expansion, have watched Columbus get an expansion team, have watched Atlanta relocate to Winnipeg, even though Atlanta might surface for the third time to get an NHL team, And oh yeah, Vegas and Seattle have also recently gotten expansion teams. Meanwhile, you have willingly supported your Quebec Major Junior League team, but Bettman hasn't even really come knocking at your door to even host an exhibition game. And in fact, I would argue that Quebec has tried to force the NHL's hand and gone on all fours and begged on their knees, pleading for the NHL to just let them host an expansion game. It's one of those situations where, yeah, you have a market that could appease a hockey team, a hockey mad atmosphere that could house NHL hockey. And the league will just say, so what? If they don't trust that it's good business, they won't come back in. So it's now up to the Morella regime to fix that, because they have a lot of burnt bridges that they're going to have to rebuild in the process.
Yeah, so that is a good segue to, and we mentioned this a lot throughout this episode, but just to repeat myself here, there is this stipulation that if Murillo can build an arena within 5 years of the sales agreement, he'll be rewarded an expansion team, and he's getting $1 billion back for this sale already. Assuming right. he signs it, but it doesn't feel, it's like not official yet that he has signed it currently, but it feels like he's going to at the end of this season.
It should be also noted that when Morello took ownership of the team yeah. a few years ago, he also incurred debt. Yeah. Then again, Michael Andlauer also incurred debt when he bought the Senators.
Sure, sure. So there is a stipulation in that contract that has yet to be signed, but it seems very likely that it's going to be signed because everyone knows about it right now. And we're all like the players and the head coaches and all that stuff. So it seems pretty clear that this is going to happen. However, there is that stipulation there. And I'm pretty sure that this is Bettman's way of getting him to sign the contract, getting Murillo to sign the contract. However,
yeah, getting him out of his hair. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's just like, it's the only way that Murillo can sign this contract, which I guess makes sense. And because I was like, when I read that, I was just thinking like, how is this even possible? Because like, if I'm an Arizona Coyotes fan, Alex Murillo is villain number one right now.
Yeah, they got duped.
Exactly.
Multiple times.
And so, and like the NHL, Bettman probably hates this guy too,
in fact he probably hopes he fails.
Exactly.
He's and, like, oh man, I have to work with this guy again. Why exactly? Hate this team?
But at the same time, it's like, okay, so there's 5 years where if Murillo can get his shit together, we're cursing here.
I'm sure Arizona fans have been cursing all week.
Exactly. Whatever. We'll let it slide here. If Murillo can get his shit together, then okay, Bettman's like, all right, fine, like we'll do that. But it's like, you know, it's almost like a put up or shut up kind of situation here. It's like if Murillo can get his shit together and build a legitimate rink together, then yeah, he'll get an expansion team. And you had kind of mentioned this before, but basically it seems like this is according to like a Phoenix radio host, so take that for what it is, but who knows if he has inside sources or not. But in any case, the ideas here is like, let's say Murillo can build a rink in Arizona and it's viable for Bettman's standards and all the people in NHL's standards, then that would mean that there's going to be 33 teams in the league. So in which case there's going to be I guess the league has ever been like an odd number of teams, but it is a little strange to have that situation. So there's probably going to be another expansion team if this happens. And then, as you alluded to in what you were saying, that it seems likely that Atlanta has put in a bid for a team as well. And it seems like they're ready to go at it again.
That was a situation, by the way, where ownership failed the fans. Yep. It wasn't a case of the fans not giving a damn. Like, yep. They showed up. Ownership screwed them.
Although I read somewhere that, like, I think it had, like, for the reason why it failed in Atlanta had more to do with the fact that, like, it was just, like, an arena wasn't anywhere near Atlanta. Like, it wasn't, like, and it was just hard to get to. And also the team. And
they'll have to right the ship in Arizona if they get another team, because that's the whole reason they were having attendance issues to begin with.
Yep. And also it's like, but like, I think there is still, like, you know, Atlanta is successful in base, like the Braves are one of the most popular teams in baseball. The Hawks are okay, I think, in attendance wise, and yeah, they're the Atlanta Falcons who do well too. But
they have the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, the Georgia Bulldogs.
Biggest college football markets.
So yeah,
they're a sports city, no doubt.
So it's definitely like, you know, like those are, and you know, and not to get into race, but I'm getting into race a little bit. That point blank, hockey is very white. And if you can have that same effect, like, and if you have a team in Atlanta, you get more diversity there, because ideally you get more people from the South who can take in a game and be like, you know what, hockey is pretty cool. So I understand that standpoint. However,
they have this team in Atlanta. I can't remember the team name, but they have once every year, they've done for a couple of years now, they have Thrashers Night. And the team wears Atlanta Thrashers apparel and everything. And the fans really get into it.
That's cool.
So they haven't forgotten about the Thrashers entirely at all. They still remember.
So that is a thing that could happen. Having said all that, I don't know what I think about 34 teams in the NHL. I feel like that's a bit too much.
You got over half the league now not making the playoffs.
Exactly. And I mean, I think that's that part I'm fine with, like, because that's like usually what happens. But it's just more of like the more teams that are in, it just dilutes the amount of quality of players that are in the league. I mean, and it's natural. I get why NHL wants to do this, because they get more money the more teams they have. But
short term for sure. Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, you know, like at Vegas, and I guess the way that they do the lottery, I guess it, you know, Vegas was able to compete right away, even though it was like a ragtag team, before they got Mark Stone, Jack Eichel and all those guys. But,
right.
But like, even still, like Seattle got like, we were kind of critical of their expansion draft too, but you know, there were still some, like, guys that, you know, like, I would still consider that a success and all that stuff. But I still feel like if you're adding one team, I feel like, okay, maybe there's enough players around that could qualify as an NHL team. But then you add another expansion draft, and I'm like, oh, God, I don't know. I feel like the product is going to suddenly not work. So...
There's also the worry that you'll get more disinterested fan bases because they're sick and tired of losing and not making the playoffs every year. And could lead to just a cease of operations or further relocation.
And so, like, I imagine this is just a way for Bettman and the NHL to get out of this, out of Alex Murillo. But it is, like, there is a potential where it's, like, like, oh, okay, well, maybe there's this, but like, if I'm an Arizona fan,
you can add like one game playoff, like, you know, you see in like the NBA lately, to like,
maybe
if you're gonna add more teams, then at least give some of them something to play for, even if in a normal year they'd be out of the playoff running, you know.
My other thought, and I know we're going long on this episode, but whatever, my other thought is what if they just, if they're gonna expand the league by 34, why don't they just go all out and do what the Premier League does, or any of these top soccer divisions do, and just have like a relegation league? So you have, maybe you add like 40 teams, and that way you could get Quebec in, maybe you get like Kansas City in, maybe you get Oklahoma City, a bunch of these other cities that, so you have 40 teams in this league, you have 20 teams in a relegation league, you have 20 teams in a promotion league, and you still have the Stanley Cup where like the top eight in the top division still play for the playoffs or whatever. But you have like two leagues basically now. That I was thinking like, okay, actually I would be so in on that. But that might be 50 years from now.
See, I feel like you could really lose some markets if they get relegated and they don't make their way back up. Like they just crumble. Soccer's a different beast. Like it's different from any other sport.
I agree. But, and also they don't have playoffs there, so you would have to, like, figure out how to do it way.
There is, I don't know if you've heard this team called AFC Wimbledon. They're, like, a small niche team.
No, I know.
But they lost their team. The fans were heartbroken. But they're back. And then they got their team back, and everyone was happy.
Yep.
Who remembers AFC Wimbledon? I don't. I didn't even know they were a team. But the fans love them there. I couldn't tell you, though, if that would work if, you know, a team like the Coyotes got back into the league and then within a couple of years they were gone.
But I think there is like a part, I guess we're having, this is a different conversation, but I think there is a part like of, like I do follow the Premier League. I follow a team there. And there is a part of me that's like, yeah, you don't want to be relegated. But on the other hand, it's like, That also like adds some intrigue towards the end of the season as well. It's like, who's going to make the playoffs? And also, who's going to be bad enough where their team is relegated? And then conversely, there's always that other chance of like, you know, if you're in the second division, it's like, oh, okay, this team is coming back up. It's going to be promoted. And you have a chance to play for the Stanley Cup. The only thing that, like, as I'm talking this through, that I'm not sure how you do is, this would mess with the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that's the best thing about hockey, the NHL right now.
Yep.
So
also imagine a generational talent like Connor McDavid suddenly gets relegated and then you never see him again.
but that's another good point too, that I was thinking about is like how would the draft even work? Cause like would the draft go to the worst team in the first division?
Soccer doesn't have no drafts.
And they don't have any drafts. Yeah. So the draft would also have to change to like, would it go to the team in the worst division, or would it go to the team in the first division? So that part I will admit that it probably would never work. But
it's definitely a left field idea, but it would definitely cause chaos.
I know, but that's kind of why I love it, because it's like, oh, this could actually work.
It doesn't love chaos, you know?
Exactly. All right, let's go to the rapid fire though. Unless you have other things that you want to talk about.
I just want to put up there 6 years from moving to Utah. In what year do they win the cup? Because I feel like in a world where you can't have nice things, this team is definitely going to win the cup before Arizona gets their team back.
Well, that's a huge if. Like, so I'm skeptical that Arizona or Alex Murillo is getting a team back. And as we alluded to, it's like, even if you're like, let's say you're a Coyotes fan and you get your team back, in 5 years, let's say like best case scenario, and Alex Murillo is still the owner. Like I might not even show up to games anymore.
Yeah. And that's the other thing that the Steve Dangle podcast brought up is like, there are fans that are just like, you're dead to me.
Yep.
Fuck you for taking my team away. Now that it's back, I'm not showing up to games until you leave.
Exactly. So it's like, I imagine that's why Bettman decided to have that stipulation, because that's probably the only way that Murillo was going to sign. And I guess like legally, that's probably a way to go about it. But it's also just like, I as you had mentioned before, it's like there's no chance that Bettman wants that to happen. So
the other thing is like, with the amount of dead injury cap coming off of their books, and they're actually going to a market that I don't know, maybe wants to spend money now, and all of a sudden, you know, maybe you add to your scouting staff, you add to your management, that kind of thing. You already have Bill Armstrong as your GM. You have Andre Tournier, who's coached pretty well, with some good draft classes ahead, and, you know, the ability to really spend in free agency. You could have a playoff team within 2 years.
I mean, like, as I mentioned at the start, I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona, I have to stop calling them Arizona now. I would not I would not be shocked if this SLC team, it's kind of a cool acronym now. I would not be shocked if next year SLC makes the playoffs. Wouldn't shock me at all.
Do you have any idea of what their team name is going to be? Because I know that was another thing where apparently they were asking around for potential team names.
Yeah, I heard that. I think I heard that they are thinking of sticking with that Utah Jazz theme, which, by the way, that's another thing that's kind of funny.
Because well, they can't pick the Blues because that's already taken.
Yeah, I know. But that is a funny thing that I forgot about as well, because we were talking about the Los Angeles Lakers, because they moved to they were originally in Minneapolis, but the Utah Jazz got their name because it used to be the New Orleans Jazz, and they just so when they moved to Utah, they just didn't change the name at all. So that's another thing, but it would be kind of cool if they did like a musical style. And yeah, you're right, they wouldn't do blues. But it would be kind of, I don't even know what it would be, but I would imagine they would do something like that. But
KSL News, which I assume the SL stands for Salt Lake, had this article listing favorite potential names for the team. And some of them that have popped up, the Yeti, which is interesting because, like the Kraken, like it doesn't have an S at the end.
Right.
But also, are there any hockey teams you know of known as the Yeti? I don't think so. So that'd be Eagles. There's only the Philadelphia Eagles and the Boston College Eagles that I know.
Well, there's the Colorado Eagles, which is an AHL team. True. Oh, that's another AHL thing. I don't know if this is confirmed or not, but this would be a huge blow if this is true. The AHL team is going to play in Mullet Arena. So
that would be cruel and unusual punishment. You lose your team, and the team that's playing in your arena
is the AHL team.
The team that just left your building, that would be tough.
Yeah. Especially, imagine being a player there. Yeah, I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this is confirmed or not, but I think that's
Blizzard.
I did hear
that.
Blizzard
is a team name that's been thrown out there. I like that one.
Yeah.
Also, the Olympians have been tossed around because they Salt Lake hosted
right. Yeah. Olympics. That'd be cool. All right. Anyways, let's do the rapid fire though. All right, 15 minutes on the clock. So playoff race. Well, first off, because I was just looking at this too, but Austin Matthews has 69 goals right now. It seems very likely that he's going to get 70 goals. I would imagine he'll get it in this next game. So congratulations, Austin Matthews, for doing that. In terms of the playoff race,
Also wanted to shout out McDavid, who's one assist away from 100.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently battling an injury, so the team has basically said...
Oh, yeah, we forgot to mention that.
Yeah, the final three games are optional. You can play if you want. So Arizona, San Jose, and Colorado are the final three opponents. So we'll see if McDavid suits up in any of them. I would assume San Jose, just so he can get the point, get a couple shifts in, and then get off the ice.
I did see that we didn't mention this, but you did remind me that the last game at Mullet Arena for the Coyotes is going to be against Edmonton. So I'm sure that's going to be a special night for them.
Only three players in NHL history have recorded 100 assist seasons. Gretzky did a bunch. Lemieux did it once or twice. And Bobby Orr.
We mentioned that too, and I think like Kucherov is not far behind that. He could also get 100 assists as well, which would be kind of crazy.
Foregone conclusion, by the way, I think he's getting the Art Ross.
Probably. And the Hart Trophy. But that's a good segue. In terms of the playoff race, though, Yeah, funny. A lot of teams clinched. I'll say them again. Boston, Florida, Toronto, and Tampa Bay have all clinched a playoff spot. It's still up in the air on who will get first and second and whatnot, but there's that. In the Metro, you have the Rangers and the Hurricanes. As for teams eliminated in the Eastern Conference, you have Buffalo, New Jersey, Ottawa, Montreal, and Columbus are all eliminated. Then on the West Coast, you have Dallas clinched their division, so that's exciting. Winnipeg and Colorado have clinched the playoffs, so did Nashville in the Central. And then in the Pacific, you have Vancouver, Edmonton, and LA, and Vegas have all clinched. So, and then pretty much every team that's not in the West that that I didn't mention is eliminated. So that's St. Louis, Minnesota, Seattle, Calgary, Arizona, Anaheim, and Chicago. Oh, and San Jose as well. So there's like there's four teams battling out for the Eastern wild card spot. I'm kind of so Washington, Detroit, and Philly have 87 points, and the Penguins have 86 points, and they all have like a roughly like two games left, in the season,
the
except
only
for five.
Is Philly, because yeah. they have one left, and yeah. they play Washington in that game, so oh. they need a regulation win
yeah,
just to keep their season alive, and yeah. then they need to pray and hope for some help.
Yeah, I was about to mention Philly has one game left, but yeah, so there's that. So that's interesting. I'm kind of hoping that it's Pittsburgh, but I just know that whoever gets that second wild card spot is probably it's like inevitable that they're gonna go on a run. I just know it. So
yeah, well, at this rate they'd be playing the Rangers.
Yeah, true,
because they'd be the weakest team.
I know
what's also interesting is the Pittsburgh Penguins actually entered Saturday's action with the final wild card spot.
Yeah,
they lost in regulation. Detroit blew a 4-1 lead, but because they were playing Toronto, they still managed to win that game. Washington beat Tampa 4-2, so they gained 2 points on Pittsburgh. And Philly somehow shut up New Jersey 1-0. So now Pittsburgh is on the outside looking in with 86 points, even though, unlike Philly, everyone has two games in hand. So they still have a chance. But what's really interesting is just how things have changed on a dime so quickly in the standings there. I also, for the life of me, can't explain this ridiculous stat that I found. Goals save above expected over the past 3 weeks. The three worst teams, Minnesota with a negative 3 point something. Then you have Arizona with a negative 8 point something. Can you guess where dead last Philly is in that equation? Can you guess the number?
No, just give it to me.
Negative 20.2.
Wow.
They're still alive somehow.
That's crazy.
With that horrid goal save above expected over the past 3 weeks, they still have a chance to do something. But again, they need a regulation win against the Caps or they're basically toast.
Yep.
Also, the Islanders, they haven't clinched, but they have 90 points. So if they lose their final two games, they could be on the outside looking in potentially as well. So they can't really afford to falter either. Should also be noted, by the way, while the Atlantic Division hasn't been clinched, it is guaranteed that the Toronto Maple Leafs will be playing the lesser of Boston or Florida, and they will not have home ice.
Yep.
So, Toronto Maple Leafs, good luck to you. You're going to need every single goal from Austin Matthews you can get.
Noah Hanifin signs an extension with Vegas, 8 years by $7.35 million. Quite a lot for this guy, but at the same time, I was looking at what he's been able to do in Vegas in this short time. So they're playing currently, but he does have an assist right now, currently. But in his time in Vegas, he's played in 18 games, so I'm going to count that assist. Of course, it could change any moment. So, but in his time right now, as he's playing in Vegas, he has 12 points in 18 games. So that's not bad. So that's interesting. The thing that is kind of interesting to me is that you have Jonathan Marchessault as a UFA now, Anthony Mantha, Chandler Stevenson, UFA, Pavel Dorofeyev is an RFA, Michael Amadio and Alex Martinez, and all that stuff. And it looks like Mark Stone is practicing, so he'll come into the lineup. But even for next season, I feel like this extension means that Jonathan Marchessault is probably not going to be in Vegas next year. And I think Chandler Stevenson might not be going to Vegas anymore either. We did mention that Thomas Hertl played in his first game, I think. So he's back. But yeah, it's just interesting. It's like they get Hanifin, they get Hertl into their team.
They could get him as well. Yep. You never know.
Yeah, that's true. It's possible. You never know with Vegas. But but now it's like next year, I'm just thinking like, oh, I don't know how they're going to work. It's like, yeah, they're going to circumvent the cap this year. It's kind of strangely a little bit weird that Mark Stone is practicing right now. It's a little strange. That's all I'm saying. But it just means that next year they're going to have to they'll probably make some cap dump move. Even still, and they won't, and it seems very likely that Jonathan Marchessault is on his way out.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I assume this is one of the first names you mentioned, but I'll mention it again because it's very important. Shea Theodore is due for a new contract after next season ends, and that contract is probably going to be a lot. So while the Marchessault one for the short term might be a bit of a stretch, for the long term, I can definitely understand why they wouldn't keep him, just because, again, you're going to have to pay Shea Theodore. And then, hey, in a couple of years, guess what? Jack Eichel.
Yeah.
He's going to be a free agent potentially. So,
yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see how Vegas works everything around. The main thing I wanted to bring up with Noah Hanifin, just because it affects indirectly my Ottawa Senators, if the Sens were to put Jacob Chychrun on the market, or he finds his way on the market because he wants to be on a winner, which Ottawa's not currently, with a year left on his cap hit, which is under $5 million, and then a team can sign him for whatever they think he's worth or whatever he wants, somewhere in the middle there. Either way, you can get pretty good value out of Jacob Chychrun at less than $5 million for one season. You can get your band of brothers back together for a year. You bring in this top four defenseman that can do a lot of good things. He's coming off the healthiest season of his career. The numbers, they're debatable, but they're still, NHL worthy. And you can definitely make a case that he's worth close to what Noah Hanifin is getting. All of a sudden, now that the best free agent defenseman is now off the board, and you've got a lot of defensemen with some potential and also a lot of yeah buts, like a Brandon Montour or Shane Gostisbehere and their defensive abilities being the butts there. At the end of the day, you look at a guy like Jacob Chychrun, he's probably the guy that every NHL team's looking at right now. And if you're the Ottawa Senators and you're not sure where that's going, maybe this contract extension that Hanifin just got is going to provide some awfully neat leverage for the Sens if they decide to move on from Chychrun. So I'm interested to see how that side of the equation plays out, because I think they're indirectly linked there.
It's funny. I thought this might have been our first episode where we didn't talk about the Bruins or the Senators at length. And of course this happens.
The Sens are going to be irrelevant as of next week, so I'm getting my licks in while I still can.
Okay. Going back to it, I feel like 7.35, I mean, I guess if we're going into, like, talking about things that we are interested in, I have Noah Hanifin in a cap league right now. I'm debating. There is a way that I have, like, Sean Durzi on my team. I also have Vince Dunn. And I have, like, I'm up on the cap, let's just say, without getting into it. So I am debating on if I want to keep him or not. But at the same time, I am kind of, like, I feel like 7.35 is a little bit much, even, just on, like, let's go back to being real hockey guys here. So it is a little bit much. But at the same time, Noah Hanifin is a good defenseman in terms of on the defensive side of things, not just the fantasy numbers. And if he can continue this, if he can put up points on the board for Vegas, it's I guess it makes sense that this is worth it. But I have a feeling that it might not necessarily be. It's very possible that he could start to dip once he gets more comfortable next year, because Alex Pietrangelo is going to be the guy. And you do have a good point that maybe they do trade Shea Theodore over the summer, and he just happens to, he's just that the person that they try to lose. Although maybe they try to trade Alex Pietrangelo, but I guess it's a good problem to have if you have Hanifin, Theodore, and Pietrangelo, and you could make an argument that any of those three are the best defensemen that they have. So it's a good thing to have, but it's also just okay, you might be right. It's how are they going to get everyone on board? Because, they circumvent the cap and all that stuff, but at the same time, it's now the cap's going to get them this
season. Yeah, because they'll get a fully healthy team before the trade deadline, yeah. And it's just oh, we have no LTIR.
Yeah.
What are we doing now?
So they're – and this is what we thought when they got Hurdle and Hanifin at the deadline is – and Mantha is that they're going to make some capped-up move over the summer. It's just now it's a matter of who are they going to sign? Because they're likely not going to get they're not going to sign Alex Martinez, and it seems with this extension that this also means that they're not going to get Jonathan Marchessault either.
It also probably means a guy like Braden McNabb, who maybe they wanted to keep around the same time as extending Theodore. Maybe now they can't.
Yeah, that's a good point too. So, yeah, they'll be an interesting team, of course, going forward, but. I will say there are some alarm bells going on. It's yes, technically this is the case that they're allowed to do this and get all these guys. But there is something a little bit suspicious that I wonder if the NHL does decide to step in, because it is a little fishy that Mark Stone is all of a sudden practicing right now.
I guarantee you another way they're going to make cap space is they're going to trade Robin Lehner's contract.
Yeah, but that's not
100% guaranteed.
But that was never a big deal, because they can just put him on LTIR, and that's what they've been doing the last 2 years.
That's true.
So I don't it wouldn't they could trade him. I'm not saying you're wrong, but it's not going to mean anything because they just put him on LTIR, and it's not a big deal.
I didn't even suggest trading Shea Theodore, but now we're on the subject. Of Steve Staios, trade Jacob Chychrun for Shea Theodore, 1-for-1. Do it now, please. This actually will be a playoff team before we know it.
Actually, you know what's funny is this reminds me back in the day when Jacob Chychrun was on the Coyotes and the Vegas Golden Knights were on this was the first season for the Shea Theodore. I actually made that trade in my fantasy league where I traded Shea Theodore, but it's one that I actually regretted because at the start, because what happened was I traded Shea Theodore and my first for Jacob Chychrun, and this was the time when you could make the case that Shea Theodore was better than Jacob Chychrun, and then my team didn't make the playoffs that following year, and I was shit, okay, that was dumb. And Shea Theodore.
Well, fortunately, fantasy hockey and real life are two completely different things. So I'm sure the exact opposite.
But it was just funny that you unintentionally said that, and it was just oh god, now I got flashbacks for one of the worst trades I've ever made in fantasy.
I know the buzzer sounded, but I wanted to quickly mention this: the Frozen Four is over, and sorry, Brett, Boston team didn't win it.
Yeah, no, I was going to get to that too. We only had two items left anyways, but so Denver wins the NCAA tournament, and they beat Boston College, and then they originally beat BU in the Frozen Four, the semifinals. Congratulations to Denver. It was a shutout too, against BC, so
2-0,
which is hard to do, because it's hard to not let Cutter Gauthier score. It's hard not to let Will Smith score, and it's hard not to let Ryan Leonard and Guy Perreault to not score. So I imagine Cutter Gauthier is going to sign with Anaheim any second now.
Dude, he's gonna do it the day the Flyers are mathematically eliminated.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. or you know what would actually be ultimate chaos? Cutter Gauthier doesn't even sign with Anaheim.
Yeah, he's going to Salt Lake.
Why am I blanking on the GM for the Ducks? Pat Verbeek. Yeah, and Pat Verbeek is just like, wait, so we traded Jamie Drysdale and for nothing? What's going on?
I'm coming out of retirement to hit the ice and kick your ass.
And then
for two solid minutes.
And then Cutter Gauthier has like office. Before Cutter Gauthier even plays an NHL game, he has two fan bases who hate his guts. But I would imagine he'll sign. Any kidding aside, he'll probably sign. And I imagine Will Smith, it does seem like he's NHL ready. And so does what's his face. I imagine Ryan Leonard is also ready. Guy Perreault might need some time, but I imagine those, although there is a chance that, those three I just mentioned might want to get another chance at BC, but I would imagine
they're the scouts were collectively waiting for those Stars to do something, and Denver's just going to be like, nope, we're going to make it boring as hell for you, and we're going to win.
And then if we're talking about signings here, this isn't even on our items, but Frank Nizar signed with Chicago. He's going to be pretty good in a couple of years. Lane Hudson signed with Montreal. He's going to be very good for Montreal. I'm jealous of Montreal there. And then Wilmer Skoog, that's an interesting name because he played for BU, but he was undrafted and he signs with Florida. So that's an interesting move. And lastly, Jackson Blake, there are three Hobie Baker finalists. I believe Celebrini actually won. The other one was Cutter Gauthier, but the third one was Jackson Blake, who was a Carolina fourth round prospect. All I'm saying is he played for North Dakota, and he killed it for both his years. I also happen to have him in my deep dynasty league. All I'm saying is he's going to be pretty good in Carolina, so watch out for him.
It should be also noted that the Hurricanes also signed Bradley Nadeau, a left winger.
He's good too.
With Penticton, he really went off last year with 113 points. In his first year at the University of Maine, he had 46 points, 19 of them goals in 37 games. So he's making waves too. I don't know what it is with Carolina, but they just make these low-key prospect addition that in a couple of years would just be like, wow, they have a good prospect system.
Yeah, it is interesting too because they also signed Gleb Trikosov as well. I mean, I imagine that's why they were able to – or they were willing to trade all those prospects to get Jake Guentzel. It's just because it's like – they have one of the, like, if not the best, they have one of the best prospect farm teams. So that's why they were able to give away all those prospects to get a guy like Jake Guentzel. And they still have like Bradley Nadeau and Jackson Blake and Trikosov. So and like they still have that that guy in Scott Morrow from UMass.
Yep.
They still have I'm blanking on his name, but the guy in the KHL. Right now,
Passion or
no?
Bowser Passion?
No, it's not Passion. It's it'll get to me, but it's all right. Yeah. I don't want to take up too much of our time here. And then, lastly, Jack Hughes is getting like this was before the Devils were mathematically eliminated, but it just so happens that New Jersey is mathematically eliminated right now, but. Jack Hughes is getting season-ending surgery. He should be back by the time for the regular season, which is, you know, honestly something that they should have done, like, as soon as Lindy Ruff was fired or something. It's just like, okay, like, just take a loss on this season for New Jersey and all that stuff. But Jack Hughes had an incredible first month, and then he slowed down. He got injured. This is like his second season, or I think third season, where he hasn't played a full season. And it's so he's now getting that reputation where he's just not, you know, he hasn't been able to play an 82-game season, full season yet. But watch out. Once he does, I mean, he's still pretty young, so it's not like a big concern, but he's having that reputation now. Where
is it, like, Alexander Nikishin?
Yes, Nikishin. Yeah, that's who I was thinking
of. Yeah. 22-year-old left-handed shot, yep. Defenseman.
In the KHL.
Draft, third round pick.
And he's in the KHL. I think he's like the leading defenseman in the KHL right now. So
yeah.
So that there's that. They keep
finding gems somehow, yeah.
Do you have anything on Jack Hughes?
I'm a bit concerned just because of the injury history once again. If he can stay healthy, there won't be any problems. But if you know, if these injuries keep happening where every year he's missing time due to injury, could really hamper how good the Devils can be with him in the fold. So,
yep.
You know, hopefully the injuries stop at some point, but, you know, you're just hoping that middle of the season next year when the Devils are aspiring to do great things, you know, he can withstand the grind of an 82-game season.
But. Yeah, that's true. I wonder, though, it's like, I feel like, yeah, the Lindy Ruff probably wasn't the right coach for the Devils, but I do wonder, because because Dougie Hamilton was also out too for
that, and they couldn't buy a save.
Yeah, and Jack Hughes also not being 100%. It's like, I feel like, because like I had mentioned this in our season preview. It's like if the Devils aren't going to make the playoffs, it's because they have injuries. Because Nico Hischier also has like injury history. Dougie has some injury history. Jack Hughes has some injury history too. So it's like, all right, if the Devils aren't going to make the playoffs, it's going to be because of the goalies, or it's because of the injuries, and both happened. So there's that. Okay, that's about it for us here on Lace 'Em Up. You can follow us on Twitter, iTunes. You can follow us anywhere, I guess. You can follow us on Twitter at Lace Up Podcast. Our Facebook is Lace 'Em Up. And you can subscribe to us anywhere at Lace 'Em Up. As well on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else you get your podcast. That's about it. I'm Brett Duboff.
I'm Steve Ellsworth. We'll chat again, episode 409 of the Lace 'Em Up podcast.
Yeah, we'll do a playoff preview, so that's going to be fun.